Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. Let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, he's back all the way from Walla Walla County in Washington State. That is Sheriff Mark Kreider, so thank you so much for being on the show. Sheriff, also retired FBI whistleblower, so he brings a unique perspective to the show. We also have Chief Joel Schultz. That name should ring a bell if you guys have been reading anything on Police One over the last decade or two, and we've been covering his stories for just many, many years. We're in our 10th season right now. So yeah, we've been doing this over 9 years as well on this show. And also Dr. Darren Porcher, retired lieutenant, NYPD, a regular on Fox, CNN, Newsmax, you name it, he's there. So thanks, gentlemen, so much for being on the show. A shout out to our sponsors. You know, our title sponsor is Gauls at Gauls.com. Comply Technologies, our satellite sponsor. Because of them, we're actually on satellite radio right now. Gunlearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. We're streaming to 1.5 million people right now. Also, Two Bells have built their new online store. A shout out to Brian Burns with the Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and also LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all these entities for helping make this show happen. Now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? We got some sensational stories. We're going to start off with, though, one that is about the Wisconsin judge indicted on charges that she helped an immigrant evade agents. She has been indicted. Oh, yeah. Then we got a Nashville police. They released footage of a shootout that left a wanted suspect dead and an officer injured. That's a pretty wild video. We have Austin police release body cam footage of officers shooting a guy during a traffic stop. Then we're going to jump over to Florida. We have a Florida deputy sheriff. He gets federal prison time for a brutal handcuffed assault and a cover-up. And, you know, I got to believe it's mostly the cover-up that got him in the grease. We got a Reading officer who shoots at a suspect who drives towards him while escaping in a parking lot. Then we have an arbitrator orders reinstatement of an Oregon probation officer who was fired over a Nazi salutes. And finally, if we have time to get to it, a man jumps on the hood of a squad car. He ends up being killed when he charges at a Florida deputy. So we have a couple of Florida stories here. So hopefully it'll redeem us, because it's usually the wackos, the whack jobs are in Florida. So if we can compensate for that by having some good solid law enforcement, you know, being demonstrated, it may counteract, you know, the wacko bad guys we're associated with. Every time I forget that's the case, Sheriff Kreider goes out of his way to point out that Florida has the wacko. So without wasting any more time, guys, let's go ahead and jump into the first one. Now, look, I took this off of Coffee and COVID. We have attorney Jeff Childers in Gainesville, Florida. He has coffeeandcovid.com. I read it first thing in the morning. You will be one of the smartest guys in the room. Anything going on major in the news, he's going to break it down, and he gets all the news sources that cover it and then provides the different angles. So it's really a nice one-stop shop. And so he starts off by saying, yesterday, the New York Times ran an update story headlined, Wisconsin judge indicted on charges that she helped immigrant evade agents. So again, this is in the New York Times. Now, Judge Hannah Dugan, that name should sound familiar. She threw ICE agents out of a courtroom, and then she smuggles a criminal legal alien exit out of the back through the private jury deliberation room, her or him and the defense attorney. And yesterday she was formally indicted by a federal grand jury, which is another, according to Attorney Childers, another nail in her coffin. And conveniently, a procedural process with which the judge was surely very, very familiar with. I love it. He's a pretty humorous guy. He goes, it was more bad news for the judge. She's already been suspended from the bench while her case continues. So I don't know what's going to happen with that, guys. But we have a couple judges in the grease that are being pursued by the DOJ recently. Any commentary or predictions on this one, Sheriff Kreider?
What's interesting is I heard some reporting that she sent the uniformed ICE agents to go see the chief judge to resolve the situation. What she didn't realize that there were plainclothes ICE agents still in her courtroom. So once she got rid of the ICE agent, the uniformed agents, then that's when she started making her plans to get the guy out the side door. A door which I'm very familiar with, having spent a number of hours in the Milwaukee County Courthouse. But I found it kind of humorous. She wasn't aware of everything that was going on.
Wow. Yeah. Well. Hopefully, we won't see her on the bench ever again. I'm certainly hoping not. What are your predictions, Dr. Darren?
Well, when Mark says he's somewhat familiar with that courthouse, I'm wondering, was he a defendant? That's another story for another day.
Wow. I was an FBI special agent in Milwaukee.
No, I'm teasing you. Come on. One thing that we do know is Sheriff Mark is a great guy. So if he was in that courthouse, he was upholding the role of justice. And that goes without saying. But on a serious note, I think it, from a wider perspective, this begs the question of how effective are we as it relates to immigration reform? It's clear that we have an immigration reform that needs to be advanced that President Trump is trying to push forward. And you hear him speak many times over and over again about radical judges that are refuting or going or trying to rebuff these policies. We ultimately want to have a great society. And I'm not anti-immigration. I'm pro-immigration. However, the immigration needs to be done legally. But if we have the judges on the bench that are unwilling to side with the legal immigration, such as this judge that has it, that had an illegal immigrant that she chauffeured out the side door to evade justice, then what are we doing as a society from a criminal justice perspective? And I think that it's important that this judge is prosecuted, which is occurring as we speak. And my understanding is there's a plea deal in the works, but fortunately, this judge will never sit on the bench again as a result of her actions.
Let's hope not. From what I understand, Chief, if she gets nailed with a felony, it'll help prevent her from getting back on the judge. If they whittle it down to a plea deal involving a misdemeanor, it may allow her some wiggle room to get back on the bench.
She'll never have any credibility. I'll just get partisan here. And I labeled myself a libertarian or independent. It's kind of hard to be a libertarian.
You said you were Republican to get on the show.
No, you said I watch Fox News all the time. That's what you said. And I did not disagree. But it's been a little challenging being a 40-year armed government agent and being a libertarian. But that aside, when you hear these Democratic politicians in Washington, D.C. saying you shouldn't mess with judges after years and years of nobody's above the law, nobody's above the law. And, doing a shotgun approach of trying to prosecute Donald Trump. And then the same thing happened with the ICE facility in New Jersey, where the local politician and some congressmen were there and assaulting ICE officers and police officers. And again, the politicians get on and say, oh, you shouldn't be messing with elected representatives. And I just can't believe that there's so much opposition to reasonable standards and measures for law and order and the defense of some of these heinous criminals. And I agree, due process, there's probably a lot of things that need to be resolved there. But the defense of these heinous criminals, not just immigrants, but criminals, is just unbelievable. It's unconscionable. And I want a robust Democratic Party. There needs to be friction. That's part of the whole design of the system. And they're just so there's so much insanity and impotence. It's just hard to believe. I hope we get back to some kind of balance.
Thank you. Sheriff?
Can I weigh in as the only politician on the panel here? So Democrat or Republican, I distinctly remember Ronald Reagan talking about Congress needs to do something for DACA recipients. Okay, so Ronald Reagan, that's about 1983-82 timeframe. It really should not be up to the judicial branch nor the executive branch. It should be up to the legislative branch to fix the immigration problem. And until they get off their keister, and as kind of a pseudo libertarian, this is the reason that we don't need more government, because 1983 is almost 50 years ago and they haven't fixed the problem yet.
That's an excellent point. Thank you, gentlemen. All right, moving along. Oh, Darren, you're a little late on the draw there, but I saw you. Darren, I was distracted because, your arms look so huge in that shirt. And I was wondering, do you have, Does someone tailor that in extra tight around the biceps, or is that your bicep stretching out the shirt? I got to know.
I have 30-inch pythons, Chip. No, I'm teasing. I just wanted to comment on something that Mark mentioned in terms of what government and what Ronald Reagan stated. He stated the worst words that you can ever hear is I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And it just goes to what Mark was stating in terms of we need smaller government, not larger. I know we have to go to a break, but I just kind of wanted to get that in there.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you. All right. We're about a minute and a half out. So let me go in and kind of whet the appetite with the next story here at rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. Nashville police, they released footage of a shootout that left a wanted suspect dead and officer injured.
Hey, buddy, come here.
We got two officers involved in this. It's pretty wild. Now, look, there are some stories we have that have video components. So if you're listening audibly, your favorite radio station or podcast, please stay loyal to those outlets that are bringing you this good quality content. In return for that, we'll describe in great detail what's going down so that you don't feel like you're missing out on anything. But if we cover a video that you absolutely have to see, all you have to do is that by the next day, 9 o'clock in the morning on a Rumble channel called Leo Roundtable, we'll have a version of the show that will come out that has every video that we talk about embedded into it. Pictures of the good guys and bad guys pop up as well. That's on a Rumble channel, Leo Roundtable, starting at 9 o'clock the next day. That happens Tuesday through Saturday. So this one in Nashville, we got a guy wanted for attempted murder. And it says that he actually died after exchanging gunfire with officers on Monday morning near the Gulch area. And this is a Metro Nashville police that end up getting involved in this one. And the incident happened near the Division Street Bridge. This dude is out for a stroll. They said he was jogging. That would be a really slow jog, the bad guy. But we had an observant cop that recognized the bad guy. It's going to be a wild story. Stick with us, guys. Commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, you know, as police officers, you know, we all know that we can go and we can buy gear from just about any place, right? Especially if you're going to do it online. But I want to remind you guys of the importance of supporting companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that fits that bill better than Gauls at Gauls.com. And, you know, even in their motto, it says proud to serve those who serve, which, of course, they do in spectacular fashion. So they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, I encourage you guys to support Gauls at Gauls.com, and they're doing something for you as well. For the loyal listeners of the show, you can use a radio code in order to get the product at 15% off. It's Radio 15, so it's Radio 15. Type that in on your next purchase. That's good until June 31st at Gauls.com. And hey, they have gift cards, and we're giving away a couple $50 Gauls gift cards every week on the show. So don't forget about that. Gauls.com. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Gauls gift card. There'll be your new best friends, Gauls.com. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. And we've got Kitty Gurley on Facebook. We got our fan base, you know, typing messages to us as well. So thanks for watching the show. We appreciate it. You know, I left off talking about a story with a video component, and we're going to jump over to Nashville, Tennessee. We got a guy wanted for attempted murder, and he ended up dying in exchange of gunfire at a place called The Gulch. So Metro Nashville Police Department. This happened on the Division Street Bridge. So the suspect, he's armed with a semi-automatic pistol, ended up being taken to a local hospital with critical injuries and was pronounced dead. So at least the cops were good shots. And look, it was a shootout because we had one cop hit. So listen to what happened. We got Officer Clayton Lewis reportedly got grazed in his left leg. Authorities said that Officer Lewis was treated and released, adding that no other officers were injured in the shootout. The suspect was identified as a 29-year-old Thaddeus Milan Hunt. And so our bad guy Hunt, he was wanted for attempted murder after he allegedly shot an employee at the Nashville Rescue Mission multiple times on Sunday evening. And so he did this at a mission, really. Now, body cam video released by the officer involved shooting or by two cops, it shows Hunt, our bad guy, he's really just jogging down the road on the side of the road, and he's got like sweats on. He's going at a slow pace, and he's going towards the bridge. Well, we got an officer that recognizes this guy, and because he's a one, you know, they just had this attempted murder thing, and his picture's been all over the place, I'm sure. So he's in his cruiser, pulls up behind the guy, tries to get the guy to stop. He's not having any of it. He's jogging slowly, continues to jog away from the cop. Cop gets back in his car, follows him, stops it again, gets out. I don't know why he thinks the guy's going to suddenly stop when the cop keeps getting out of his car. Well, meanwhile, you can see another cruiser up ahead on the bridge, pulled to the side of the bridge, and this guy gets out because the bad guy's jogging towards him. And this is the officer, Lewis, who ended up getting shot. So as the bad guy gets close and he sees Officer Lewis there, it's like playing dodgeball, right? He's trying to, you know, get away from the cop and stuff. And then all of a sudden the bad guy, he had something in his hand. I couldn't tell whether it was like a holster or like a little pack or whatever, but he ends up producing the gun, whether from the bag that he had or from his waistband. And he shoots at the cop, hits the cop, grazes his leg. And now there's a shootout with both the other cops. Bad guy goes down, he gets up and he points, and it looked like he took another shot at the cops. Looked like he fired at least twice. And that's the way he went down. Of course, bad guy ends up, you know, on the ground, ends up, you know, they pronounce him dead at the hospital. So that's the way that ends. We got just under 5 minutes, gentlemen, whoever wants to take this one first, but good, clear, crystal clear, you know, video from body cams. I love it. I was pretty impressed with this. So Darren, why don't you start us off on this one?
You know, so use of force is always ugly, no matter how you look at it. And this was clearly a justified shooting. But as police departments become more and more transparent, we are looking to introduce the teachable moments to the public and what law enforcement encounters so they can have a greater understanding as to why deadly force is employed. When we look at the 1989 Supreme Court decision titled Graham versus Connor, it establishes when police officers can use force against an individual. So when we look at, and also hindsight is, you know, is always 2020. When the public sees things, they all become Monday morning quarterbacks and they make these assessments. However, it's that officer in that heat of the moment that makes a decision that can protect either him or him, her, or a third party, which is the public. I think the officers did a great job in this particular scenario as I look at the video. And it's just unfortunate that when we look at this anti-police rhetoric, we don't have enough of these videos that are being circulated so the public can understand what officers encounter on a regular basis.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to be at the station when they're both show back up to work and stuff, because, you know, the cops have a fantastic sense of humor, do they? I mean, everybody on the show knows I love cops because they usually are workhorses. They are not lazy and they have great senses of humor. I suspect normally because of all the crap we have to deal with, and it's just how it helps you deal with stuff. But the one cop that starts it off, it's the other cop that gets shot. It's not him, you know, and he got in on the shootout at the tail end, but it was his backup that ends up trying to help him out that ends up getting grazed in the leg. So I'm glad the injury, you know, what, you know, but I'm sure there's going to be a little bit of a bantering going back and forth about that over the years to come. So any more commentary on this, Chief Schultz?
You know, this may be a little obtuse, but one of the things that I always try to do with my academy students and it is to have them do people watching so they know what normal conversation is, what normal body language is, what a normal gait is, what normal joggers look like. And particularly as we get into a society that is more device-oriented and less aware and people-oriented, we may miss these things. And if you look carefully at this guy who's jogging, doesn't speed up, doesn't slow down when the cops are behind him, has these furtive glances behind, and you'll start to notice that he's got a little less arm swing with his right hand because he's obviously, you know, if you've ever tried to carry concealed in a jogging suit, you know, it's not an easy thing. There's no waistband for you. There's a little tension in mine, but anyway, So, you know, there's some subtle cues that I'm sure this officer picked up on. Even if no officer had seen no gun, actually not seen a gun in this scenario, they could have known from the body language that it was very reasonable to assume that this person's behavior was indicative of having a weapon in his possession.
Good point. Excellent. Excellent commentary. Sheriff.
I hesitate to weigh in Monday morning quarterback with Dr. Darren Porcher looking over my shoulder, but I'm going to throw it out there. First and foremost, kudos to the officers for being aware and picking this guy up and recognizing him from their briefings. That's the kind of guys you want working for you. At first, I didn't understand why the contact officer was getting up on the sidewalk, but I think strategically that put him at a better angle. The only thing I would Monday morning quarterback is he's wanted for a shooting. Get out with a long gun. Maintain cover at your vehicle instead of moving out into the open where you can get shot in the leg. So
excellent.
Great job by both of them.
Thank you, gentlemen. Time for our second commercial break. Stick with us. It's going to get real. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. They're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing their CD3 conductive distraction and de-escalation technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, is called the Glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And yes, you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The Glove has achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conducted energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, it virtually eliminates weapons confusion. So you can stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most hands-on common sense approaches that's ever come along. Go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you, and they actually have some pretty cool videos as well. ComplianTechnologies.com. Now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at BlueTheGold.com. And if you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to BlueTheGold.com. They translate search and seizure documents into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to BlueTheGold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up, actually today, anonymous tips, May the 14th. Sign up at BlueTheGold.com today and join thousands of your peers in blue and step up your legal game, because frankly, you and your agency cannot afford not to. BlueTheGold.com. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. I have to tell you that the in-commercial dialogue is pretty interesting today. So, hey guys, we're back from commercial break. Any more words and commentary? Or are you guys ready to keep moving along? All right, let's keep this party going. We got some great stuff coming up. We have another story that's also got a video component as well. You know, we just got done talking about a guy wanted for attempted murder that was just out for a stroll, a jog, and a cop recognized him, and then he ended up shooting the cops back up. But anyhow, the cops are fine. Bad guy's dead. That ended, you know, we're pleased with the way that ended. Now we're back at rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel again, called This Is Butter. Austin police released body cam footage of officers that shoot a guy on a traffic stop.
Shots fired.
Now listen how this thing goes down in Austin. So Austin police say that around 12:40 in the morning now, so it's early. On Wednesday, May the 7th, Officer Jake Pitcher and Officer Ryan Kirchberg, they pull over a driver for failing to use a turn signal. This is why traffic stops are so important, guys. Inside the car, there's a female driver, a male passenger, and there's also a young child. So the male passenger, later identified as 26-year-old Branson Barrels, he tells police that he does not have any identification, so they ask him to step out of the car. Now, remember, he's on the front passenger side, right? So as Officer Kirchberg attempts to pat down Barrels, as soon as he gets out of the car, he pushes the officer, starts to run away. Well, the officer reaches out and he grabs onto this guy, right? So he's not gonna get away easily. At that point, when Barrels know the officer's trying to keep him there, he reaches towards his waistband. And by this time, the other officer that had been on the driver's side talking to the driver, you know, was on the passenger side as well. They see this guy, he's reaching for his waistband and he's trying to pull out a firearm. So both officers end up firing several shots. They hit our bad guy. He's taken to the hospital. treated for injuries. He actually survives. And a gun was found in the area that he was reaching. Austin police said they also found multiple magazines. And our bad guy has a long criminal history. And he also had outstanding warrants, too, which is why I'm sure that he was trying to bolt from Austin police. So that's the way that that went down. Guys, commentary on the, I tell you, there's, when you watch it in real time as opposed to slow motion, wow, what a difference. You know, it's funny when it's you and you're there and you're the first person, you know, we as cops, we see so much, we have a tendency to slow things down and process things differently. But when you're watching a video, a representation of something in real time, sometimes it's really hard to pick up on things that the officer actually picks up on. I mean, you guys know better than I do how to explain that, but it's kind of crazy. Well, we got about 8 minutes. Any commentary on this? At least we've got, neither of the cops got shot and they were, and again, it's dark, it's nighttime. So it's a lot to deal with. Chief Schultz.
Yeah, I'll start. First of all, let me just make a side comment about, I know this wasn't a passenger side approach. It just happened to be an officer, approaching a passenger on the passenger side, but, and I'm an advocate of the passenger side approach, you know, when it's possible, but we do that partially because it's disorienting to the occupants of the vehicle, but we need to recognize it's a little disorienting for the officer too, because it's kind of backwards from a lot of things. And so in subtle ways, our reaction while on that side of things may be a little bit different than a traditional driver's side approach. So maybe just a level of awareness that when I'm on the passenger side, things are a little bit mirrored, and that may not make sense, but I think it's a factor. Again, we have a lot of behavioral indicators on the passenger. Never made any contact. I don't know if his seatbelt was already off when the officers approach, but you know, that's, you know, are you getting ready to go if you don't have your seatbelt on? Most people wouldn't think about that. And the way he exited the vehicle, this tuck and roll kind of thing, again, really, really scary, you know, concealing his side. And I noticed that the officer, just an observation, these guys survived, did the right thing. So I'm good with that. But he had his flashlight in his left hand, which is his dominant hand, his gun hand. So that was a little concerning. And I think I also saw a backup officer at one point with the old flashlight in one hand, the gun in the other hand. I hate that position. I can't believe that that's even still being used and taught.
call medical for Sheriff Kreider.
and you know, we can talk about why I think that. And the officer on the passenger side was a little bit of a casual position, so. I'm not sure he was fully prepared for that type of attack. So just a couple of things I noticed.
Interesting. Well, go ahead, Sheriff.
First of all, anybody that disparages the FBI flashlight position, I think that's why
are you still teaching the crouch and sport coat removal firing position?
As a command staff member, I teach don't go out after dark. That's the easiest way not to use a flashlight. A couple things that I think are very pertinent to the conversation is I had to watch it a couple times because I thought originally the cover officer on the passenger side was going for his taser, but it turns out that he was left-handed and he was actually going for his gun. And I believe when I watched it that the contact officer, once he came around the vehicle, originally pulled his taser, not recognizing that it was a lethal force situation. Obviously, that happens in a split second and he's got to make a decision. There's two of them, and maybe just naturally he is going for less lethal while his partner is going for lethal. But I think part of that is recognizing the situation as a lethal situation and the taser is no longer warranted at that point. But I think this is a great example of how quickly a routine law enforcement function turns deadly. And I don't think that there's any way that you can expose the public to how fast these things happen in real life. So the body camera kind of gives you an indication of how quickly those decisions have to be made and how quickly they can turn deadly.
Yeah, you know, an excellent commentary. I think it's important to point out for the civilians that are listening to the show that most bad guys we, you know, encounter, no offense, Darren, but most of them, they just want to like push and get away, right? They're not really out to injure the officer for the vast majority. They just want to get away. But it is a whole different level when they're actually trying to injure, damage, hurt, or in this case, actually shoot. That's a whole different level of a bad guy. So we're normally do that passive aggressive, not passive aggressive, but it's more of a passive instead of active resistance is where they're actually trying to hurt you. And that it's a whole different bar. But Dr. Darren.
There's no such thing as a routine traffic stop, especially when you have three individuals in a vehicle. Granted, one of the persons was a child. You had a woman and you had a male. And oftentimes we can become relaxed or complacent because we do so many of these traffic stops. I'm a firm proponent in there should always be two officers that conduct a traffic stop. Unfortunately, a lot of police departments don't have the manpower to provide two officers to conduct these traffic stops, which I think is somewhat of a problem. I think safety is your first bet when you engage drivers, especially with tinted windows. I lived in Texas for a number of years, and I lived in San Antonio. Austin was an hour away. But you have some pretty hairy areas in Austin, Texas. But at the same token, you know, fortunately, the officer survived. I thought that they did what they were supposed to do. And, you know, I question that the officer initially with the left hand using a flashlight and then transferring into a firearm, because your dominant hand should always be the hand that you use a firearm with. And the secondary hand, be it the officer's right hand in this particular situation, should be how you hold a flashlight. Fortunately, the officer survived.
So I have with you saying that, Darren, I have an interesting question, especially really for Sheriff Kreider. So different agencies feel different ways about having, you know, like having red dots or just having sights or maybe having lasers on their guns. But we also have handguns that have lights on them, too. In other words, so you're not preoccupied with having to hold the flashlight separately. What any preference on policies in reference to those two things?
Well, you bring up an excellent point, and I can tell you that when I was in the FBI and working on a task force, you know, we arrested a ton of people, and it was routine to go through a house with my gun drawn. The guys that we're looking for were usually murderers or very vicious assaults. In the state of Washington, if I point my weapon at somebody, it's a use of force and has to be reported. Yeah, so I think that in some states, we've pushed officers away from the convenience of a weapon-mounted light or other device because we're thinking that's a use of force. In my opinion, that's not a use of force. It's not a use of force until you pull the trigger. So unfortunately, I think we're sometimes hamstrung by the law in how we do that, and we have to teach alternative techniques.
Yeah, that's an excellent point that I didn't think about. Guys, coming up on our next commercial break, though, stick with us. A lot more to come. We'll be right back. All right, guys, you know, as law enforcement personnel, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and even disciplinary issues. But gunlearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at gunlearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and also police departments nationwide. Now, if you have your own agency, your chief or sheriff, they've got a deal for you. The founder, Dan O'Kelly, has arranged it so you can actually host a seminar at absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. Go to gunlearn.com to get more information. Again, that is gunlearn.com. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and we're joined by Sheriff Mark Kreider, Chief Joel Schultz, and also Dr. Darren Porcher. You know, we just had a surprise topic come up about not just use of force, but, you know, we're talking about nighttime encounters and holding flashlights. And we initially started off by holding, you know, we don't like to say your weaker hand, right? So we at Tampa, we call it, you know, your non-dominant hand, right? But, you know, your gun hand's your gun hand. You don't want it to be obstructed with anything else. You know, you want to keep that free for your gun. And if you're going to have, you know, if it's an impact weapon, you're obviously going to be holding it with that same primary hand, but your non-dominant hand is going to be holding flashlights, things like that. And then we talked about with today's technology and how we've got some really good targeting systems or red dot sites or laser sites. You know, not all agencies allow cops to carry laser sites and also flashlights, though. But Chief Kreider or Sheriff Kreider, I did not mean to insult you, Sheriff. Sheriff Kreider.
Maybe you insulted me.
But that was Chief Joel Schultz piping in for our audible listeners. But anyhow, Sheriff Kreider brought up the point that there are a lot of agencies to where it's technically a use of force if you point your firearm at somebody and you've got to do the documentation and thus the justification for doing that. And of course, if you have a flashlight attached to a firearm and that's the flashlight you're using, then every time you point it at someone, you're also pointing your firearm as well, which would be the issue with cops not doing it because they would have to document it and it would have to be justified. And that justification wouldn't be there for every, you know, for every agency. I know back in the day when we had our 6D cell metal, you know, flashlights, those were weapons, impact weapons for us that we used a lot.
And they were very good weapons.
They were excellent. I mean, there were some agencies that had it dummied down. I mean, they had to go start buying the plastic Radio Shack flashlights, you know, instead of the 6 or 5 cell D metal lights. But yeah, they were. And when I carried a radio and I had to do like Motorola input research, you know, they would do like think tanks. And I said, look, don't give me a small radio because it's a potential impact weapon for me when I get into a fight. And you never know. You know, just you never know until you know that you're in the middle of a fight or the guy sucker punches you. So it was very important back in that day when, you know, working in the hood and around very violent communities, you know, that I actually had the tools that I could use in a fight to my advantage. But times change, public perception changes. It doesn't mean that we were wrong back then. It just we evolve as a profession, and we certainly are a profession. But it's a great conversation to have. I don't know that there's really any one correct answer. It's just fascinating, Chief.
Well, I'll say a couple things. First of all, I noticed that when Darren got short on the clock, you gave him a hand signal. When I got short on the clock, you just muted my mic. So tuck that away.
Ouch. The sheriff sent me a private message saying that you needed to be muted.
You know, if we look at that big mag light, I don't think anybody would have ever thought, man, what if we put a gun on that light? But when we have a gun, what if I put a flashlight on that light? I know I'm old school. I mean, I start out a wheel gun, but I don't like the idea of a flashlight on the gun. First of all, it's another switch to worry about. You know, we're going to be tempted to use that as a flashlight. And I just think, I guess we haven't had any recorded, you know, misfires with that. Maybe it's out there and we don't know about it, but I think there's a danger there that's unnecessary.
Okay. All right.
That's a good point, Chief. I never thought about it that way, but I just want to piggyback on something that Mark mentioned in terms of drawing a firearm being a use of force in the state of Washington. Like, where does it end? Like, when we look at the force continuum, technically an officer's presence would be a use of force based on that perception of, you know, drawing a firearm. Verbal commands would be a use of force. You know, like, where does this end in terms of it being a use of force? So, you know, it begs the question of these legislative branches in these particular states and cities are just totally out there, and they don't have practitioners in law enforcement that'll assist them in an interpretation as to what a use of force is.
Yeah, we've come a long way, gentlemen. We've got roughly 5 minutes. If you guys want to just say like 15 seconds, if you got anything else you want to throw in there, I'd like to move on to one more topic though. But go ahead, Chief or Sheriff.
I think Darren brings up a good point. If you look at uniforms in particular, have been, you know, we've gotten away from the dark uniforms and the militaristic haircuts. Now we, you know, god awful beards and facial hair and all that kind of stuff. The only thing I will talk about is, you know, when you go to clear a building and you pull out a rifle, where are you going to control the flashlight if you don't have a weapon mounted light? It makes much more sense to have that light mounted on your weapon than it would be to try, because now you're telling them, don't take a long gun in there. You're going to have to take a handgun because there's no way you can control a long gun and have a light. And I think that is just a training thing that we need to get our officers doing, and they're very well versed with all the stuff on their weapons platforms.
That's a good point. And Darren, NYPD doesn't have long guns, do they?
Well, they do. The traditional patrol officers do not. However, it is a contingent of special operations units that are always in the field, such as emergency service, CRC, critical response. There are a lot of long guns that are actually on the street, but the traditional patrol officers do not have long guns.
Okay. All right. Yeah. We're seeing more and more videos with cops with long guns. But we're still seeing instances where they were, if they would have had the long gun, even like in today's story, it would have served a very good purpose and would have provided this a greater safety factor for the officers involved too. Like that shooting on the bridge, that would have been
The highway patrol officers in the NYPD do carry long guns.
Is that right?
Yes. So in a situation like that, it would have been a highway patrol officer that would have encountered or engaged these individuals, and they would have been armed with long guns.
Just out of curiosity, not to go too far down the rabbit hole, but now you just got my curiosity peaked. Where do they carry the guns at? Are they accessible in the cockpit of the car, or do they have to go to the trunk?
They're accessible in the cockpit of the vehicle. They don't have to go into the trunk. I mean, that's just too laborsome. That's too laboring if you had to go into the trunk to get a long gun. Whereas if you have the shotgun rack directly behind you, you know, you can get to it. And it's welded into the vehicle. So the only way to get in there is you have to bust the glass to get in there if you're trying to steal it. And we don't have any instances on record where someone has actually broken into a police vehicle to steal one of the long guns.
Okay. All right. I love it.
We have some incidents where a cop has left the door unlocked accidentally and they've got to unlock. Yeah, but I mean, come on, these are cops, man. So that's another story for another day.
All right. Well, go ahead, Sharon. We'll go ahead and wrap up the show talking about this topic, but go ahead.
I just want to point out that the term cockpit is very non-inclusive, and I think we should use the term flight deck.
I love it. You know, we just covered a story the other day, and we had an interesting car. I think it was yesterday, because we had Brett Bartlett and attorney Ken Affianco. They're both certified firearm specialists through gunlearn.com, and we had an agency that just totally eliminated, I think it was the state, they totally eliminated, it was a state agency actually that eliminated shotguns. They've taken shotguns out of the arsenal, and they're only using long guns, and they're only using .223 instead of .556.
I think if you look at the if you look at the FBI firearms data, and that's not use data, that's performance data, shotguns are they actually do over-penetrate even with buckshot in them. They're much less effective than an AR-style platform. And I can tell you that I kind of joked with some of my former colleagues in that my officers are probably doing 1 to 2 shootings a week. And they're like, holy crap, what is going on out there? And I said, we shoot a lot of deer, because we have a lot of deer get hit on the highway, and it's much easier to dispatch a deer with a suppressed long gun. It's better for the officer, better for the animal, than it is to try and do it with a pistol.
Wow. Wow. I never would have thought of that. Guys, it's been an excellent show. Don't go anywhere. But Sheriff Mark Kreider, Chief Joel Schultz, Lieutenant Darren Porcher, thank you guys so much. And I usually take this opportunity at this time to talk about the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Randy Sutton, he founded the Wounded Blue. He's actually at Police Week right now. But they also have a special called Guitars for Cops. And, you know, this organization, they help cops out in a world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. And at Guitars for Cops, for $1,000, you not only get a really cool-looking guitar, but you can get it signed by one of your favorite country music artists as well. And that is at Guitars, 4, cops.com. So make sure you check that out as well. If you want more information about the panelists, all you have to do is go to leoroundtable.com. I've got their pictures and bios, you know, on the screen. And I think that everybody is pretty much on LinkedIn as well. So thank you, gentlemen, so much for being on the show. And I also want to give a shout out again to our sponsors, Gauls, Compliant Technologies, GunLearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, Medicare.live, Safeguard Recruiting, and Two Bells. Also, TampaFP.com, FormerLawman.com, LawOfficer.com. We'll look for you guys back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.